Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
You hit the nail on the head. He is a better rider than that.
If you're in a dogfight, backed into a corner, like you can't count and keep out.
Well, it's that time again. Hello, everyone. I'm Ricky Carmichael alongside Ryan Villapoto. Welcome to Title 24, presented by NBC Sports. Good to see you guys today. We got a lot to talk about. But first, before we get going, got to thank United Motorsports, Boxo USA, and of course, Quadlock. Got some great partners, and we'll talk about them a little bit later on. But RV, you were in Seattle this week. Didn't get to see you. I know that's a home race for you. You were taking care of people, and I wouldn't call it babysitting, but probably getting to see some old familiar faces. But nevertheless, it was another exciting weekend. What was your thoughts off the right off the top?
Well, number one was, as I was the bad guy on talking about weather, you know, kind of bringing everybody's morale down, and it turned out to be a phenomenal night of racing. Track was really technical, but dry, promoted good racing. So that's always great to see in Seattle, just because it's such hit and miss going up there. Like I kind of mentioned before last week, you know, really talking down on it, you know, you're getting on my case, but you know, it worked out for the best. We had a dry track. So yeah, it was some really good racing. You know, I thought the track was technical, listening to some press conference stuff and just behind the scenes, you know, information that, you know, you can gather. It seemed like it was not as tough as Indy and some of them out there, but also, man, some of those rhythm sections, they really got ate out on the face with some gnarly steep, you know, I don't want to say kickers, but steep ruts that could really upset the motorcycle.
Did you watch, did you have a chance to watch qualifying practice at all?
I did not this weekend. No, like you said, I was up meeting old friends, and I think some of the people I haven't seen for 20 years. So it was, It was a blast from the past.
It was crazy because I was watching just kind of at a glance and while we're trying to do some work at the same time. And dude, I don't know what was going on, but like Cooper was pulling in to the pit area nonstop. He'd do a lap, pull in, Carlos would tweak on his bike or whatever. And I don't know if you saw the, I know you were super busy. If you didn't see the qualifying times, I mean, he was way off. And then, you know how it is. Like, well, he kept pulling in, they'd change something. Pull in, they'd change something. And I just didn't know if you had saw it. So
I guess. I did. Well, I did listen to his, I want to say it might have been a Vital or a Swapmoto piece on that. He just said he was very uncomfortable during practice. And to your point of, you know, pulling in, trying to find those settings, you know, a couple clicks here, a couple clicks there. There's not a ton, obviously, that you can do down on the track, but just trying to find his groove, you know. So, but like he said, he goes, as soon as the lights, you know, went off and turned back on for opening ceremonies, it's a, you know, the head switches into gear and you leave all that out on the track and practice. And, you know, they get the skid steers on the track, they prep it. You know, and he said it. He goes, the lights came on, and I was in the zone. So he was able to pull through. Not the night he wanted, obviously. He would have loved to get that win from Eli, but just fell short just a little bit.
Hey, do you like? This just made me think of something. And like at this stage in the series, and if you were in a tight battle like this, and you were like, dead even with your main competitor that you're going for the title for. Would you switch like major settings on your motorcycle, whether it be engine, suspension, whatever that might be? Like, would you?
So funny. We were kind of talking about this on Saturday with some people, and yes and no, depending on how off I was and what I was struggling with. I have drastically changed shock springs, but between qualifier and main event, internal setting was also changed a little bit, but I put so much faith and trust into, you know, the mechanics and the team personnel and along with the suspension guys, Shim from Showa, you know, Scott Bennett was the guy at the time. I know you've worked with him, but I was like, I can't go through whatever I was struggling with. I can't even do this section or can't go through the whoops. I was like, we have to figure something out. So he ended up putting like a spring rate that was substantially lower on the motorcycle for the main event and made it work. You know, it's got to have that trust in your team to make those good decisions. So yes, to answer your question, yes, I've made some drastic changes before main events.
Yeah. Wow. That's nuts. I'm trying to think of even like when in 03, when Reed was putting it to me, or you go to 05, 06, where it was tough. Like, I don't know, man, I could never, it's not that I didn't have the trust in my mechanics and the team personnel. I was just, I just would rather know what I had than to go out there with something, not knowing what I had. And I would just try to basically ride around the problem. Like if it sucked in the whoops or sucked in 90 degree corners or whatever it might've been, I would just try to alter my line. Cause I felt like, you know, I would do better just knowing what I had, even if it wasn't that good. That makes
sense. No, I kind of agree. That's one way to look at it. But I looked at it from a whole different side. I was like, okay, well, I know where we're struggling at, and I know we've gone through so many changes during the week, you know, testing and all different directions. You know, you have a pretty good baseline on knowing, okay, this may not be perfect, but I know what it's going to do. Or, you know, like, so I would really lean on, instead of trying to really ride around the problem so much, I would be like, okay, well, I can either choose this and struggle here where it's already really in my head, or I can try to make it better. And I know on the rest of the track, I will be fine. So, I'd always try to use every advantage I could get. And some of that was by changing and making big decisions right before a main event.
Yeah. Hey, switching gears to the main event, 450 main event. Was there ever a time, like when you're watching it, that like, was there ever a time or moment you're watching like, oh, this guy has a chance to win tonight other than Chase? Or like, did you think one guy had more of an advantage than another, talking Eli and Coop? Like, what was your thoughts initially early in the race?
You know, I think like Eli said early press conference, he's like, man, Kenny got me early. AC came up the inside after the little sand section, the little wall passed Eli also. So there was a bit of cat and mouse going back and forth. But early on, as for a clear, you know, winner, obviously I was, you know, watching and it got Chase is starting to build a little bit of a gap. And we all know his speed, but we also know what tends to happen, and it showed up again. You know, I watched him go out, just open up that turn coming across the start straight, and I would say, just by watching on TV, he was a good 10 inches outside the main line.
He was,
and you can watch, and it just, he's under braking, he's on the side of the tire, there's less contact to the ground, and you could watch it just wash out, you know, like I can't tell you, look, I haven't rode the Honda. I know that seems to be a problem with him, like dealing with some front end grip or issues. Watching to me, is he struggling with the motorcycle? He may be, but he's a way better rider than pushing the front wheel right there. That, I think that was just a total, rookie's not the word, but just total mindless mistake here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, and you hit the nail on the head. I think I was talking about it on the broadcast, but he just, you know, I think he tries to open up that corner, probably to get a better exit, more straight run through that rhythm lane. And you know, and you explained it perfectly, dude, you can't do that. And no one could have said it better than what you just did. RB is like, he is a better rider than that.
He is, and in the very last second, you can see the bike kind of turn, like he wanted to get up the down the inside of that rhythm section, probably because the ruts were getting deep. Those, like I said, those faces, those were tricky ones in both rhythm sections. It's almost like the bottoms got eaten out and the top of the jump was still hard. So call it the kicker was mid face instead of up on top, which is, I think, worse than having a kicker at the top of the jump, because the kicker at the top of the jump, you can adjust your speed to power through it. But when they're down in the base of it, the motorcycle just completely unloads. So trying to get back to the right, it seemed like he just waited, and then made a quick reaction to the right, and the front wheel couldn't hold it.
Yeah, I like what you said though. It's like, yeah, you haven't ridden the Honda, so we shouldn't speculate if the bike isn't up to par. I personally, obviously, it's winnable. It's winnable.
And he's got fast times. You know, I personally think maybe the bike does have a little front end issue, but he's a better rider. He should be able to ride around that.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm so glad. Yeah, honestly, I'm just getting to the point. I'm just tired of talking about it.
Like every I know it does suck.
I mean, but you said it great. Like, dude, it's on him. You gotta ride around it. So he's out there doing his thing, and we're sitting there. We were following that battle between Kenny and Eli and Coop, and it was kind of back and forth. And I got to tell you, for a minute there, I think Coop got by Eli, and I'm like, oh man. I thought, because now just completely basing it off of the last 2 weeks and what had happened at Detroit and Indy, I'm like, oh man. I didn't think that Eli was going to do what he was going to do. So I was kind of entrenched in that battle and watching that, because I think it's going to come down to these two guys between Eli and Coop for the title at this stage with only six races left. But we got some sound on tape with Eli after that win, and what it meant to him and just how crucial it was, which was pretty insightful to listen to what he had to say.
Well, it was just an outstanding night for us. I needed that bounce back. It was almost like I was in a little bit of a slump the past couple of weeks, and just a little bit off. So feeling much better now. That track raced really, really cool. There's a lot of different lines out there. Obviously, it was very dicey early on there. I got passed and then had to make those passes back. So had a lot of fun with it and had an awesome crowd tonight. So thank you, Monster Energy, Star Yamaha. And this was important for us.
It definitely was. Definitely
important. Why do you think it was important for him to win that race?
Well, I don't think he can let Coop keep that stride going. You know, I think it was a critical race for Eli, because he's definitely been in a little bit of a slump, like he said. You know, came back with a tweaked neck or pulled muscle, whatever that was. Definitely was not himself. And to your point of being that there's only six rounds, I think keeping himself in this dogfight to the very end is so crucial. It was very crucial for him to get this win, I think, to stop the momentum with Eli, and also prove to him that he, you know, like, he still got it. I was telling somebody else the other day, I was like, you can uncover every single rock during the week and off season, and your mind still, I mean, I don't know about you. I told this to somebody. I was like, your mind, you still get down there behind the gate and you start second guessing and questioning, can I do this again? Can I keep this up? But as soon as the gate drops, all of that's out the window and it's full go time. But the mind, it's like a mirage. It plays tricks on you. So I think mentally that was huge for Eli.
Yeah. You're that's the way I see it, on 100%. And you're exactly right. It's like, you know, and I can't speak for you. I want to ask you this question, but I'm going to tell you how it was for me. So each weekend, you know, we have success, we win, but I would always pick out things that I did wrong, you know, and be like, okay. Or if somebody fell, did I win on default? Or, hey, was this guy catching me at the end of the race? So I'm always having to give myself affirmation and, you know, basically, I don't even know what the right.
It's a weird feeling to be in. You're on top of this mountain, right? This peak, and the sides are so steep. One little, you know, movement to either side, it's such a slippery slope. That's in your mind. That's what you feel like. Everybody's got the target on your back. Like, I feel like for me, like, I had to reassure myself every single time I went to the line to just mentally for myself. I don't care if everybody on the team said, dude, you are the best guy out there. You still go down to the line and your brain starts playing tricks on yourself. Yeah. That's why, you know, single man sports, golf, motocross, you know, MotoGP, all these single man sports where you have a great team behind you, but as soon as you get down on the gate, all those team members sit behind those tough blocks or in the stands and filming and all these things. And sure, they've done all their work, but still it comes down to being on your shoulders. And man, it's the mind plays games. I can tell you it does. It's the most bizarre thing.
Yeah. Reassurance. There. Yeah. Reassurance was the name. It's crazy. Cause I mean, dude, you were so strong mentally. I mean, you were, dude, like, it was unbelievable. It was so cool to see just how mentally strong you were. But at the same time, even guys like yourself, who was one of the most mentally strongest guys that have ever done this sport, you still needed that reassurance in yourself every single weekend. And I think, you know, Eli shared that this weekend on the podium. And I tried to say that. I said that right before. I tried to convey that in the call. Like after he had won, you could see the emotion, how pumped he was, just what he was doing on the bike while getting to the podium. And I want everyone who's watching and tuning in to know, just like, listen, man, all these top guys are vulnerable mentally, you know, and they need that reassurance. And he basically mimicked what I said. It's like, look how important this win was to him. You know, it's as good as everyone was, as much success as we had, you still second guess yourself. And I wish I had the key to turn that off, but I don't know how the hell you do. But I think looking back, that's what makes guys like yourself, me, multi-time champions, is I feel like there is a certain aspect to where you race like almost scared of someone beating you.
I totally agree. We've had this conversation before, you know, to all the fans out there. This isn't the first time me and Ricky have talked about it. We talked about it at Red Bud, sitting around a fireplace, you know, a fire outside, like, just, man, the mind games that yourself plays on yourself, is it's bizarre. So to get that, and like, and back to, you know, like six rounds left, like, you don't want to get, you know, if, let's say it wouldn't have worked out that way and Coop would have won Seattle. Now I feel like, you know, in Coop's position, he's got Eli on the run, right? So now that Eli was able to bounce back, now they're tied in points. They're going to split the red plate. It's going to be a very 248. They're tied. Yeah. And Chase is 22 back. So
22 back's tough, dude.
22. Yeah. Six to go. He'd have to go on essentially a winning streak all the way out of town here. So yeah, don't see that happening. Not with those two up there, but good on Eli. You know, he was able to bounce back and put himself in that position and reassert himself as you know, that not to have Coop start to, like I said, get that little momentum on his side.
Yeah. So this kind of, like, since we're breaking this down for our quad lock question of the week, Justin Ten Burr. So it's Justin Timber. Like, he has a great question. And he asks, with both Tomac and Webb being two-time champions and tied, which one has the momentum? And I was thinking about this, and this is my position. I give Eli Tomac the advantage. And the reason that I give him the advantage, and I hate picking who I think is going to do it, but the reason that I give Eli the advantage is because he has the raw speed. Coop doesn't have that raw speed. Like, if you're going to put your money on the table for who can do the fastest lap, it's going to be Eli. So I give Eli the advantage for that. Eli is good when the track gets broken down. Eli is better in the whoops than Cooper. And then Cooper has to strictly rely on the whoops being short, they becoming jumpers. He has to rely on the track slowing down, becoming more technical. And for the people that are just listening, we're watching replays of Eli coming through the whoops and just blowing by guys. He was coming outside wide through the turn, getting a good entry into the whoops, able to stay on top, carrying a ton of momentum. He gets by Kenny Roczen right there. And from that point on, you could just see he just starts firing. So my point for the quad lock question of the week to Justin Timber is that's why I give Eli Tomac. He's got more raw speed. He's just as good as Eli when it gets rough. He's better in long sets of whoops. If you're Cooper, the reason that I don't give Cooper the advantage is Cooper doesn't have the raw speed. He doesn't have the whoop speed like Eli does. So, I mean, at some point you can only, you have to go win. You have to be good in the whoops. You can only rely on things going your way so many times, you know, like there's just too many things going against him at this point. I think that Cooper is stronger mentally than Eli. And that's, you know, that's not a slight towards Eli. I just think that Cooper is better at the mental game than Eli, but he's relying on too many things for him to play in his favor. And that's a tough spot to be in, man.
I would agree with that. I think right on, you know, I think Eli's, like, to your point, got the speed, but Coop it feels like he's a dog that gets back into a corner. He's going to figure a way out of it. But like you said, if relying on too many things going his way, then building shorter whoops, things like that, that are uncontrollable. I know he's mentally, like, I would agree that he's, if you're in a dog fight, backed into a corner, like, you can't count Coop out. But as for the speed and as all around, I think it's, the pendulum is swung to Eli's side at this point.
Thinking about that end of the race there on the podium, when Daniel, I think it was Daniel, who was asking Coop about, you know, his thoughts on the race and, you know, where he was at and what needed to happen and all that fun stuff. I love Coop's candidness when he's on there. We got some sound that we're going to roll from you, but I want to get your take on what do you think this was directed towards?
What is the approach from now until Salt Lake City to get this done for the third time?
Try to beat Eli, but it's not easy, man. He's riding really good, and all these guys are really riding good. So it's going to get crunch time here soon, but we'll just stick to the plan. We're in a good spot and just got to trust the process, baby.
Do you think he's mocking anyone there? Was that directed towards anyone? Like, what, like, why do you think he said that?
To be honest, I'd like to be a fly on the wall over at the Baker's factory to see. I mean, I kind of know what they're going through. So do you. I trained with Eldon for many, many years. And I kind of, you know, for a long time knew Eldon like the back of my hand, what he's going to say and what he's going to do. And to be honest, it's just a lot of repetition out there and keeping those guys accountable for what they're doing. So honestly, I think, I don't know if it was directed at anybody, but he's spot on. Like, Eli's really good right now. So he's going to have to trust that process and mentally be in the game, you know? So it's going to be a very interesting, you know, closeout to the season here as it comes down to with six to go.
I think myself personally, so the heat race win for Coop was massive for a couple of reasons. You know, I mean, he was riding like crap in practice. We already talked about that. But dude, the pistol shoot over the finish line, Cooper wins. He comes over the finish line, boom, points back at the man. Yeah. Chase Sexton, that is. Is that fueling the fire for you, RV?
You know, I think it's a little interesting for me because, you know, if that was a win against Eli, then I could see it totally making sense. You know, I know Chase was closer in points before Seattle, but still, in my opinion, the race isn't with Chase right now. It really hasn't been for a few races. So, you know, like we've mentioned this in a previous show, like he kind of reminds me of James. I think you said that, like, he's got the speed, and when he's on, nobody's going to touch him on a Saturday night. But there's a lot of noise coming in, a lot of mistakes. We watched it happen again on Saturday night. So I feel like that was good for his confidence, I guess, but for me, that was the wrong guy to be given the old pistol shoot to.
So we got a clip of them talking about that. He kind of clarifies why he did it. So let's see what he has to say.
Yeah, man, it felt good. I hadn't won a heat race all year, and Chase is good in them. So, yeah, it was a cool deal. And, you know, it was one of those things to maybe make him get out of whack and lose focus. And seems like it maybe worked.
Dude, look at, do you see Barsha?
Yes.
Barsha laughs. I love it. That's a good reaction. I mean, I don't think that it worked myself personally. Do you think that Coop says that if Sexton was sitting there at the table?
You know what? I've been watching some of the press conferences and from the lights class to the 450, and they've been good. They've been a little controversial. You know, there's been some good questions asked from media, straight shooters, straight to the point of what has happened, you know, on the track those nights. So yeah, I think Coop would have said that in front of if Chase was sitting up there on the podium or at the press conference. I really do think he would have.
Some speculation. I mean, word on the street, and I don't know this to be true. I have a good idea, and I'm sure you know just as much as I do. I mean, if Chase is gone, you know, and he's leaving Factory Honda, do you think that changing a manufacturer is going to be the magic answer for him, and miraculously these mistakes won't be happening?
So I personally think that a change in manufacturer is probably going to be good for him, yes. Wow. But I think he's going to, whatever baggage he has at Honda, for whatever reason, call it the mistakes, the baggage that it's going to, in my opinion, come with him. The baggage is always going to come with you. It might be a little bit different. Now, every motorcycle, in my opinion, and I can only speak for, you know, the ones that I have rode, which isn't very many, but still, every motorcycle has their pros and their cons. One might be really good in the whoops. One might be really good, you know, through the rhythm sections, vice versa, turn well. So as if the switch happens to a different manufacturer, and let's say it's two KTM that we've kind of, you know, through the grapevine that we all kind of know is potentially happening, that's coming. You know, like I said, I think the baggage is going to come with him. It might be something different that he's then going to have to figure out and work around. Like I said, every bike has its strong point and every bike has its little bit of a weak point. And as a rider in his position, and, you know, I can only speak for myself, a little bit of you, like you have those weekends, you have those issues with motorcycles that you have to adapt and be good in those where they're bad. You don't have to be great where they're bad. You have to be good where they're bad, and you have to be great everywhere else to be in that position to win a championship. So like I said, I think it's going to come with him. It just might be something different with the motorcycle. I mean, and then on the other hand, maybe not. Maybe it's just exactly what he needs in that motorcycle chassis and setup is going to fit him perfectly. I don't know.
What do you think? You know, it's interesting as we sit here and talk about it. I mean, could you imagine, like, so Jet getting on this 450 for the Pro Motocross Championship, and then just he doesn't have the issues that Chase does? That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, I can tell story, you know, if we want to tell just a quick little, is I was at Kawasaki, Monster Energy Kawasaki, and I was winning a lot of races, and I had Jake Weimer on as my teammate. Uh-huh. And he couldn't, like, the front end on the motorcycle was so rigid. I knew that, but I had to work around it and was able to do that. But there's some riders that just can't work around that the team didn't make it super easy either for him. They're like, hey, we have one guy crushing it and we have another guy struggling. You know, the bike must be pretty good. That was kind of the thought process, right? And didn't do, I don't think, the right moves to improve Jake to get him more comfortable. But same thing, it's I think Jet and his, you know, I know he's young, but his experience, the way they go about things, he's going to find the weaknesses, and he's gonna be good with those weaknesses. Like I said, he doesn't have to be great with the weakness points on the motorcycle. He's got to be good and great with everything else where he knows the motorcycle's good. So yeah. I think they're all winners. Every manufacturer out there can win a championship. Totally. Period.
100%.
Nothing against. Period. They're gonna. They can win.
Yeah. 100%. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. And just so everyone knows, and I know, listen, I know the displacement's different. RV, you know, it affects 450 engine, affects a chassis different than a 250 engine would affect the chassis. But the actual frame is the same as the 250 and the 450. Just for people who didn't know that, Jet's frame is identical to Chase's. So anyhow, but I mean, that's neither here nor there. Jet wins another race. Really, the only thing I would say, the only controversy, which is pretty massive, was that heat race with Cameron.
Yep.
When Cameron and Jet collide in the heat race, Cameron tries to square up the corner, or actually exit early and jump onto the triple. He was doing a different lane than Jet was. And just by watching that RV, I didn't see Cameron's left leg come off. So clearly he was off balance when he did that. It was hard to call. I wish I had a better angle, like directly from behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have that. Unfortunately, we don't have that direct angle from behind. So, but the angles that we do, I don't think that Cameron meant to do anything, but I would have to lean towards the side of most likely it was his fault.
Yeah, you know, watching it, probably, you know, definitely misjudged, you know, because it looked to me like Jet was nicely starting to fade to the left. Cameron, like, I'm just going off of the watching the racing scenario. He's going to go down and try to cover the inside here. But as soon as Cameron jumped on, it's on Cam's side. I think he's at fault, not giving enough space. He jumped. He's kind of tripled up, veered to the right a little bit onto the after the start straight to that rhythm section, and just clipped Jet. You know, so I would agree it a little on Cameron's fault side that he should have gave more space. I feel like there was more room to the left to fit a motorcycle through there, and just misjudged how close. And maybe, you know, like I said, maybe I feel like Jet was also, okay, I'm gonna get through this rhythm section and protect the inside. So he was gonna start to fade left. Mm-hmm. would be the common sense way of coming in there and protecting that inside. But yeah, right out of the gate, start of the rhythm section, I think Cameron misjudged kind of how close he was gonna be landing next to Jet and just clipped each other.
So for that main event, what last question on that? Let's just say you're behind Stu in that situation, or whoever, and what would you have done in that position if you were Cameron and the guy in front of you? Cameron did everything, in
my opinion, I think, right, because a guy like Jet, you have to make a quick retaliation, a quick pass back. You let him get away from you, you're not going to catch him, right? So same with James. Like for me, I would have to, if James, you know, passed me, I had to make a quick decision on when I could, if the passing point arose, make that jump and make it happen right away.
Right.
If not, those guys are going to get away. They're going to sprint and get away, especially James. And I think Jet too, like he would have, if that pass would have happened and they would have just been, he would have clear, no crashes. I think Cameron would have had a hard time passing it back. So quick response time to the pass back, I think, is key in that position. Mm-hmm. So like I said, just misjudged how close that they were going to come together on top of that tabletop.
Right. So we go to the main. I think Jet made some awesome passes early. You know how important it is to make passes early on like that. This is the beginning of the race. He goes by RJ and he's going to make quick work of Cameron. Then the next thing you know, he's just, he's out front. But those were some key passes. It's easier to pass these guys when they're all bunched up early on. As you know, hate seeing Styles go down just shortly after this through the whoops. And what we're watching here is these first couple laps, key passes early on in the race. And then here comes Jet. He's going to take the finish line for his fourth win of the season. Great job. He looks like he's pretty bummed with the performance. But as I'm watching this heat race, this main event, dude, like, McAdoo and RJ, I mean, they didn't let Jet get too far away. Do you ever think that they're like, or do you, here's my question. Do you think that Jet was just kind of holding the lead at bay of where he was and just kind of marking him? Or do you think there was ever a shot where those two other guys, RJ and Cameron, could have maybe caught up to him?
So I think that is something that is, that Jet does, and Hunter, but Jet, we're talking about him currently, is they do that so phenomenal, is only leaving what they have to leave out on the track. I was a guy that was 0 to 100. I could only race this pace.
Right.
If I wasn't in this pace, giving it 110%, I only knew one speed, but man, Jet, I feel like he was able to, he knew he had those guys covered. He's only going to push so hard. As the track's deteriorating, it's getting worse. It's getting more sketchy. I feel like he was just, he was managing he manages a race phenomenal. He only put leaves out there what he has to. And I think that's a smart racer, but I do think that he had, if he had to turn it up, he's got more in the tank.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Well, we got a there's an off weekend. If you guys are sitting around, check out UnitedMotorsports.com. Go check out what they got. They are live online. Whether you need parts, apparel, accessories, they got you covered. Also, if you're in their stores, there's six locations across Kentucky and Ohio. Go through there. Boxo USA, another great partner. They are actually in store at United Motorsports. So check them out. Check BoxoUSA.com out also. And then, of course, Quadlock, great company. Quadlock case. They got all of your phone case needs, mounts, you name it. They got it. Chargers. I got their charger next to my bedside table where it's nice. Got one where you can put it upright, lay there. Actually, my kids love it too. But check out QuadlockCase.com. And Justin Timber, thank you very much for the Quadlock question of the week. That was a good one. Hopefully you enjoyed our response. Make sure you DM us, and we'll get all your information over to Quadlock, and you get a free phone case. Also, while you guys are online this week, make sure to use Title24 for the promo code at UnitedMotorsports.com. And of course, Boxo as well. We'll get you some discounts. I know everyone loves some discounts, but we appreciate all of your guys' support. You guys are great sponsors, and we appreciate it. And thanks for giving back to the sport. So all of our listeners and viewers, make sure you check it out. So weekend off. Do you think that some guys are going to ride some motos, start testing?
Well, from the looks of it, I was snooping around on the old interweb, and Paula looked like it was pretty busy recently.
Really?
Guys making their transition to outdoors. I believe we have only one or two weekends off in between, you know, supercross and motocross. So it's going to be a quick turnaround time for these guys. So yeah, I'm seeing that everybody's starting to get outdoors, get their feet wet there, try to get ahead of some testing, you know, for outdoors. So that's always a really cool time of the year. You know, I think to see the transition going from supercross, motocross, the weather, as everybody knows in California, has been pretty wet recently. So the outdoor tracks are just mint right now. So yeah, I think it's that time of year where we're going to start seeing, you know, some transition, some things changing, guys that maybe are out of the championship, you know, points chase, that are really trying to put some more effort into the outdoors. That kind of tends to be a little more on the lights class side. Okay, hey, we're out. We're going to, you know, I think Chance Hymus is done racing, and he's focusing on outdoors, you know, so you're going to get a lot of that more in the lights class. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the rest of these six rounds, these play out. You know, we have Phoenix, we have this weekend off, and then it goes right into Phoenix, which is always a good place to go and race. I think that track promotes good racing. Yeah. It always has in the past.
Totally. Hey, I know one thing for sure, RV. I don't know about you, bud, but when you're in like the mid-season grind, or you're 3/4 of the way through the Supercross Championship, this weekend off was sure nice to sit back and have a couple beverages. That's for sure. I mean, everyone probably thought we were all serious, but damn, we would have a good time.
Yeah, it's always good to get a weekend off, but also, I will say, if you're in Eli and Coop's position, if I was in their position, I was always like, okay, let's just keep this going. Like, let's just finish it up. Like, we're on a roll here. I'd rather just keep these races moving. But yeah, they throw the weekend off, so everybody will go back, get a chance to regroup, maybe potentially make their bike better, work on some of their issues. But if you're mid, if these races are rolling over, as you can only do so much during the week. So, it'll be interesting to see who comes back swinging out at Phoenix.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I love the Triple Crown. Listen, I know you and I have
talked Triple Crown.
Yeah, dude, it's so much fun. Okay. Like, hey, for you and I sitting here.
Oh, no, I wasn't paying attention that it's a Triple Crown. Yeah, Triple Crowns are insane for racing.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll be in, we get the week, the boys get the week off this week. We're going to do our show again next week. I'm going to plan on telling some great stories. Should be a lot of fun. We've got something new for you guys coming up, so make sure you tune in to Tile 24 next week. Myself personally, I love going to Glendale, but nevertheless, we appreciate all you guys tuning in and watching us. Please subscribe wherever you download all of your podcasts. Make sure you like, comment. You can watch Tile 24 Motorsports on NBC YouTube page every week. It's also on Peacock. So make sure you leave your comments there. Please subscribe as well. And check out our Instagram page. Leave your comments, whether they're negative, positive, and questions. We're going to have questions of the week next week as well. If there's anything that you guys want to know, we're happy to answer your questions, or we'll do the best that we can to respond. Anyhow, next week, Glendale, Saturday, RDL starts at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There you go. It'll be on Peacock. And then, of course, the live racing starts at 10 p.m. Eastern on Peacock live. Going to be a good one. Man, we're down to the wire, RV. It'll be the final stretch for the AMA Supercross Series, Monster Energy Supercross Series. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
It will be. And, we got a couple of these hybrid Supercross tracks coming up also, the bigger road race style courses where they're going to build it. I think Atlanta Speedway is one of them, so there's going to be some, it's going to be interesting to see who that favors, I guess. Right. We all know Eli's is very strong on those bigger, more super, like Supercross, bigger Daytona style tracks. So see if Coop can come out swinging at those rounds. I think that's going to be the last ditch effort to see where kind of things are going to end up. Right. Like if you got two races to go and you're three races to go and you end up winning Saturday night and then on to the last two in a situation like that, that is a real pressure cooker. So it's mental game coming in. Okay, I'm 5 points down, two races left, however it ends up being. That's going to be one hell of a championship, final for us fans and as YouTubers and podcasters. It's going to be a great, great season finale to watch.
Certainly. It's been a phenomenal year to be tuning in and watching AMA Monster Energy Supercross Series and the inaugural SMX World Championship. A lot to watch. That's it, man. We thank everyone again for watching and listening. We'll see you next week, and everyone have a great weekend.
Trust the process, baby.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.